Hello and welcome to the Fantasy Game Plan Podcast. My name is Leo Howell. I am joined by Matt Harmon. And this is a new podcast that you have not listened to before, unless you're listening to the first episode going back in time. In which case, hi, hello, welcome to our humble beginnings at the Fantasy Game Plan Podcast. And basically, what we hope for this podcast to be is kind of a look into fantasy football from a slightly different perspective than you'll hear a lot. There are plenty of podcasts out there, plenty of really good podcasts out there, where you'll get some data-driven information, just some general opinions and gut feelings, you know, people who will do start-em and sit-em stuff and all these different things. And they're good resources, and it's smart people. There's podcasts that we listen to, you know, every day that we like and that we enjoy. But there are some things that are maybe lacking or that, you know, we feel like we can bring to the table in terms of strategy and things like that. So we're hoping to bring kind of a strategic slant to the fantasy podcast, give you something where we're presenting the thoughts behind why we do what we do in fantasy, why we pick the players we do, and things like that. So with no further ado, I will introduce you to my co-host, Matt Harmon. Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you write and where people can find what you do.
Yeah, as Leo mentioned, I'm Matt Harmon. I'm a footballguys.com staff writer. I'm also a scout for Optimum Scouting. I'm kind of all over the place. I also write for Sportable NFL, which is Sal Stefanelli's website, and also own my own little place at thebackyardbanter.com. And yeah, I just big fantasy guy and just trying to bring my voice to the table.
Yeah, we mentioned this when we were discussing this before, but I've never heard Sal's name pronounced before until you did. So it was just a thing where I never actually thought of how to pronounce Sal's name. And of course, Sal is like the godfather of two quarterback fantasy leagues and is definitely somebody that you should follow, particularly if you're in that kind of league, because if you're coming to this podcast specifically for two quarterback leagues, you might want to go check out Sportable and some of Sal's other stuff first before you come to us. But anyway, no, and I'm Leo Howell. I currently write most of my fantasy football stuff at numberfire.com, which is just a really cool analytics and data-driven football site that does a lot of fantasy stuff as well. And I also write for bucksnation.com. And, I've been playing fantasy football forever, but only a couple years ago I realized, hey, I should probably write about this too. And as I've gotten into it and read more and studied more, you know, I've kind of learned strategies and things that have influenced how I play. And really, when it comes down to it, I think we both agree on this, that there's a lot more to fantasy than just figuring out what players are good. There's a lot more to it than just, hey, this is a good player, I'll take him.
Yeah.
There's a lot more decisions that go into it. So, as you may have heard Matt allude to, he does some scouting work. I also like to watch film, but I also do statistical stuff. So, neither of us are going to be too staunchly in some sort of like just stats or just film or whatever sort of camp. But with that in mind, we just kind of wanted to start off with some players, just to kind of talk about players and to show how things will be a little different on this show and to kind of show what influences our decisions on players and things like that. So we're just going to toss out a few players, talk about their current value and kind of how we see them relative to how we value and target players in fantasy drafts. And we're going to start with one of our favorites to discuss, and that is none other than would you call him a victim of your reception perception?
Yeah, one of the victims.
is that on Backyard Banter that you did?
Yeah, that's my own little baby, my own like process that I came up with. So yeah, that's on Backyard Banter.
Okay, so definitely go to the Backyard Banter and check out the part two, right, of reception perception on Cordarrelle Patterson, Minnesota Vikings wide receiver, according to Fantasy Football Calculator, currently being taken as the 43rd player off the board at the 4.07 pick in standard leagues on their website. So just give me your thoughts on Cordarrelle Patterson and kind of how your style as a fantasy football player influences what you think about Cord Patterson and him as a fantasy asset this year.
Yeah, to be real honest, I, you know, was initially pretty scared off of the Cordarrelle Patterson, his high ADP, and, you know, the fact that he didn't play a ton of snaps as a rookie and everything like that. I was initially a little backed off by that, but after going through and watching, and if, you know, reception perception is pretty complicated. It's also a mouthful to say, and the rhyme was probably not a good idea. I haven't said it out loud many times. It's a little tough, but so after watching, you know, a lot of his work, I came away pretty impressed, and he ends up kind of checking off two of my boxes as players I want to draft, which is one, I want to draft a lot of high upside guys, you know, players that I can see vastly outperforming their average draft position. And while his is high, I think his ceiling is, you know, is even greater than the 20th or so wide receiver, which is where he's coming off the board right now. You know, he wasn't just an athletic freak, which we know he is. You know, watching his tape, he was a guy who, well, he beat guys with his gifts. He's also a really smart and really aware player. And so he's someone that I kind of want to take a risk on because I can pretty much bank on him after putting him through my process. I can bank on him, you know, eventually becoming a good player. So, which again fills two things I'm looking for, which is one, that big upside, and two, a guy that I believe in. I don't like to take guys on my fantasy team who I don't think are going to be great NFL players because then I just almost, one, my ego can't sustain it, and two, it's just I want to feel confident in the guys I'm putting out there. And if it's just somebody who I'm like, yeah, you know, he can be an average player at best, it's not something that I don't want to take that onto my team.
Yeah, I feel like we'll talk about this in a second because I want to bring up Sean Green next to speak to that point you just made. Cordarrelle Patterson's currently going as the 17th receiver on average according to Fantasy Football Calculator. With the high of his pick range being at the end of the second round, meaning that there are some number of people taking him in the third round alongside Vincent Jackson, alongside Pierre Garçon, alongside Victor Cruz. And to me, where my kind of philosophy, I guess, comes into play here and the way I think about things is I just think that there's no way that you can get better value than that out of him. I took a look at him for NumberFire, and one of the things that I learned when I was looking through his numbers at NumberFire was as a receiver, in the first eight games, he only had 20 targets and he caught 13 passes. And using our proprietary data at NumberFire, net expected points, on a per target basis, he earned 0.39 net expected points per target. 0.39 net expected points per target. I know that if you're listening to this and you've never been to NumberFire, you have no context for that. That's not very good. Just for perspective, I'm pretty sure Gronkowski's is like 0.99. And DeAndre Hopkins was like a 0.6 last year. So 0.39, obviously on the lower end of guys like that. But, you know, that's not exactly his best games. His first eight games, he was obviously a very raw prospect and he was still working his way into the NFL. So those last eight games is when he kind of got more involved in the offense. The quarterback situation settled down a little bit. And they started trying to get him the ball more. He had 57 targets in the last eight games, 32 catches. So obviously more volume. He also had a 0.39 reception NEP per target. It didn't change at all. He saw more targets and he caught more passes and he had more overall production, which is good for fantasy, but he didn't show an improvement. He didn't show any sort of breakout as a efficient receiver. He just saw a breakout in terms of, we've got to get the ball to somebody. This offense is super boring when Adrian isn't running 80 yards. Let's give Cord the ball and see what he can do with it. So if Cord Patterson was like a seventh round pick right now, I'd be all over him. I'd be taking him in the late sixth every time. But, you know, with that in mind, like NumberFire's projections, and I'm inclined to agree with them. I don't agree with all of them, and we'll probably get to that eventually down the road. Currently have him as the 33rd receiver, on par with a Mike Wallace, a Dwayne Bowe, a Golden Tate. And I kind of think that's the right place for him. And since he's not being taken there, I'm probably not going to own any Cordarrelle Patterson this year because I'm not going to get him at the 6.10, which is where Mike Wallace is going. So it kind of, for me, it speaks to my lack of, I guess it's risk-taking. I see it as investing in a largely lost cause with a slim chance of an upside. Like, Cordarrelle Patterson, like, people say lottery ticket all the time in fantasy football. Cordarrelle Patterson's literally a lottery ticket because you're putting money in and it has to be exactly right for you to really profit on it. Because, like, you can get a lottery ticket and hit three numbers and get, like, $5 back and then you just wind up, you know, buying a soda. Like, that's not, like, and that's basically, if Patterson, you know, reaches what his value is right now as a mid-range wide receiver too, all you're doing is just getting back what you put into him. And in order to do that, he's got to do well to be like on par with Andre Johnson and Wes Welker and Roddy White. And so like the thought of him exceeding that is literally like lottery ticket odds to me. And obviously, for me, that's a little more based on statistics, but it's also based on what I know about him as a player from, you know, draft coverage, because he was a player that the, you know, people mentioned with the Buccaneers, because they needed team speed on offense. And obviously if you want team speed on offense, he was one of the guys to get in that draft. But it's just not a guy that I see as having that ridiculously high ceiling. I can see him playing well and living up to his ADP. But I'd rather take a guy that I'm more confident with the floor, which is where the concern is for Patterson, the floor matching the ADP rather than the ceiling, because his ceiling matches his ADP, his floor doesn't. And for me, that's the concern there.
Right. And I think that's totally understandable. I think, and again, that's just a philosophical difference between the two of us is, you know, I think I'm definitely the more inherent gambler of the two. And I just see Patterson differently, you know, after watching him. And maybe I just want to, you know, believe in my own product, but I saw him beating a lot of, you know, zone coverage and almost 50% of his man coverage attempts. And it got better and better as the season went along. If you want to, you know, go and look at the data on Backyard Banter.
Let me put it this way. Do you think that Cordarrelle Patterson can have 90 catches for 1200 yards and 8 touchdowns this season?
Yeah, I think he can. Okay. I think there is a scenario where that can take place.
Okay, because that's currently what, because he's the wide receiver 17 on Fantasy Football Calculator. Number Fire's projections have wide receiver 17 as Victor Cruz with that stat line. That's getting your value on where he's being picked right now, is to do that. And I think that that's his ceiling. So even if you think he can get a little higher, then like you're talking like, you know, Jordy Nelson range of right. Like, you know, 85 catches with 10 touchdowns. And obviously you can add in the rushing stuff. And if they get him the ball and he breaks like an 80 yard rushing touchdown, like that does skew things a little bit, but, I'm just more inclined to agree that he's not, or inclined to think that he's just not going to get that many touchdowns overall. When you're talking about a guy who's maybe not quite as technical as a receiver, and obviously you've done more work into looking into him than I have, but, I can just see maybe not being the same sort of red zone threat. And also, I'm not sure that offense is really going to be able to sustain multiple guys catching passes in the red zone when they've also got Adrian Peterson, because Rudolph is going to catch passes in the red zone and Jennings is going to catch passes in the red zone and Peterson's going to carry the ball in the red zone. So I just don't see that being some high-powered offense that can really sustain all those guys. The big play potential is there from Patterson, and that's how he'll prove me wrong. But otherwise, I think that maybe, like I said, he's being drafted for his ceiling right now and not for his floor. But we'll move on to another guy then, and we mentioned him briefly, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on him, because we've discussed him before as well, is Sean Green. You want to talk about believing in your product and only taking good football players. Sean Green will put that to the test, because Sean Green is not really a great football player. But personally, this year, I'm high on Sean Green. I'm kind of looking into the Tennessee running back situation a little more closely now, as I'm looking at Dexter McCluster as well for an article that may or may not be out by the time you listen to this. But Green is a guy that just kind of gets the job done and does what he's supposed to do. And considering that he's currently being taken super late in drafts, this is the kind of guy that I'm going to take a chance on. I know that it's not, you know, super putting my neck out there to take a guy like Sean Green. You know, when Matt's over here talking about how he's going to take you know, Cordarrelle Patterson with a fourth round pick, and I'm bragging about Sean Green, who's currently undrafted in fantasy football calculators format. But that's the guy I'd rather take a shot on. I'd rather have three or four guys like Sean Green on my bench who I feel like can score. I mean, I would almost be willing to bet that Sean Green scores more touchdowns than Cordarrelle Patterson this year. Like, that's the sort of thing that I'm willing to put on the line with this, is that I just feel like he's just a guy who, on a team with a rookie who, you know, people like, but I feel like is already a little bit overrated in Sankey, and a guy in McCluster who's definitely not going to be a short yardage back. He's not really built for that. That he's got the opportunity to earn consistent playing time just by being a guy who can get 4 or 5 yards, and when it just so happens that those 4 or 5 yards are from the 4 or the 5 into the end zone, like, I feel like he's going to get those chances and he's going to succeed with them. He's not going to set the world on fire with, you know, his yards per carry or anything, but that's not what I'm asking him to do, you know, at his ADP. And so rather than, you know, taking a Roy Helu or a CJ Anderson, who are in maybe better situations, better offenses, I'd rather take a Sean Green, who I feel a little more confident will produce, even though the team isn't great and he's not even a great football player.
Well, to make one point just about myself here real quick, when you said I'm willing to bet that Sean Green scores more touchdowns than Cordarrelle Patterson, that inherent gambler in me, I'm talking about the ears perked up. So we'll have to talk about that off the air. But as far as Sean Green goes, you know, and you're saying that's not a bold take, but you're probably, what, maybe one of the 5 people I've heard this offseason talk anything positive about Sean Green. So maybe you are being a little more bold than you've given yourself credit for. But, you know, and when you – I think when you take a late-round running back, and I think you're wanting to take a guy who's going to – who has a – you know, you can see – you can envision the scenario where he can become – a star, maybe star is not the right word, but, you know, he can really become a big part of your team. And when you say Sean Green in comparison to some of the guys who are, you know, last round picks on fantasy football calculator, you know, you're looking at guys like Roy Helu or Donald Brown. I can see what you mean by Sean Green is at least gonna, you know, he's gonna outproduce those guys, you know, but at the same time, that's not a guy that I tend to invest on. When we get to those final rounds, it's just I don't want to take a guy that I've kind of already written off, and I have already kind of written him off. And there's just way too many red flags going on with, you know, how much they like Sankey. It would not that I agree with that, but and he's also an injury risk. I mean, I don't tend to put a ton of stock into injuries for big name players, but for guys like that, I don't know. It's just not a part of my draft strategy, but I can see where you're coming from.
See, I'm the opposite with injuries. Like a first round guy, I'm likely to maybe consider injury risk if it's, you know, something kind of obvious and lingering. But for a late round guy that's, you know, replacement level anyway, and I can just drop him and grab somebody else, like I'm more willing to take a Sean Green over, you know, like, I guess, you know, a Sean Green or a Chris Ivory, I guess, would be the two examples of maybe some injury plagued, incomplete, kind of risky, if you want to say it's a risk, even though they're late round picks, kind of guys that just aren't, like, they're not special. They're not like, they're not jumping off the page at you. Whereas, you know, people look at a guy like Nile Davis and they'll take him later in a draft because he's obviously the better football player. Like, if I'm drafting a football player for a real football team, I'm taking Nile Davis over Chris Ivory or Sean Green. But it's a lot about opportunity. It's a lot about what they're expected to do with where their value lies at the moment. And I just feel like with a guy like Green, like, I may not even have to take Green. I may just have to be quick on the trigger and pick him up before week one, you know, if one of my running backs get hurt. So, yeah, it's just... I feel like he does get written off, and those are kind of the guys that I like sometimes, is that I feel like a lot of people wrote off Joik Bell last year, and that's a guy that I wound up getting, you know, a lot of shares of. I feel like people wrote off Nojan Moreno, and he's a guy that I didn't get as much of as I should have last year, even though I wrote about him a few times. But, you know, sometimes being in the right situation and having a value that matches that situation so that anything that you do to exceed, just is obvious, it's just house money at that point. You know, that's things that I like to look for. And so I'm not saying that Sean Green is going to be Nojan Moreno, but, I feel like he's got some potential to kind of exceed expectations there. But let's go from the bottom of the running back totem pole to a little closer to the top. And let's talk about Arian Foster. We're talking about injury concerns. We're talking about, you know, running backs. We're talking about taking risks and gambling with injuries. What is your take on Arian Foster? How does your strategic approach influence what you do with Foster, who's currently sitting at a early second round ADP on Fantasy Football Calculator?
Yeah, I'll admit that Foster is one he's been a tough one. This whole offseason, trying to figure out exactly how I felt about him. At first, I'm looking at him and thinking, we missed a ton of games last year, and he's seen a big volume. You know, his yards per carry, he's dropped every year. So I was kind of staying away. And then, you know, and again, great staff at footballguys.com. One of our best is Dr. Gene Brammel, and I've heard him, you know, preach constantly the last couple weeks on the Audible that Foster's not a guy that he's really worried about as an injury risk. And then I'm starting, and that makes me, you know, intrigued, because, you know, Dr. Gene is a guy I trust, I respect his opinion. So I start to look at him, I started to kind of look at him in a different light. You know, I do tend to be worried about guys that are coming out of a zone blocking scheme, especially guys that didn't come from a big pedigree like Foster, you know, who was an undrafted player. Those guys do tend to worry me. But at the same time, there's still a pretty good line there in Houston, except that right tackle position that they can, you know, they haven't been able to figure out since Eric Winston left. So, you know, they took a great guard like Xavier Suofilo, and I that's a player I was really high on, and so I can kind of envision the scenario. Again, I talk about envisioning a scenario where Foster at least justifies that second round ADP, and I can kind of buy into him. And I did take him in one of the MFL 10s that I'm in. I did invest in him in the middle of the second round in a PPR league, because I do think Bill O'Brien is going to use him a lot as a pass catcher. He's really the only back on the roster that fills that sort of role. So I can buy into him, but then to be clear, I'm really not looking to invest much in running backs in the second round this year. And that's something we can maybe get to later when we talk about tiers and everything. So he's probably not a guy I'm drafting a lot, but if I got put into the position like I did in the league that I took him in, where it's a PPR league and it's in the middle of the second round, he's falling there, I'm okay with bringing him on my team, but I'm not doing jumping jacks about it.
Yeah. First of all, the MFL 10 that you took Arian Foster in is our MFL 10 that we're in together randomly, which features one of my weirdest rosters that is going to break everything I've talked about. So don't go find this MFL 10, because I broke like all of my rules.
No, really, really don't go find it, because I think I missed two picks and now I'm all on all auto draft. So I have my entire bench is like Justin Blackman and a bunch of rookies. Blackman, yeah. So let me be clear that, so I can tell you this right now too, is I didn't draft that team. Just to save my own ass here.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's not pretty. I mean, no. I could see apart from Blackman, I could see someone taking this team, someone taking Robert Griffin III, Teddy Bridgewater, and Johnny Manziel at quarterback.
Didn't mean to. But even the Manziel one, which I'm sure we'll talk about Manziel later. That's a pick I didn't even make. So I can't justify that team one bit.
All right. Well. Yeah, my team in that league is super weird, too. As far as Foster goes, I feel like he's a guy that he's currently being drafted at his value. To me, the risk is baked into where he's being drafted, because he's proven production-wise to be a top option at his position when he's healthy. And the fact that he's being drafted, you know, after Eddie Lacy, who's a much less proven player, after Monty Ball, who's a much less proven player, and after Marshawn Lynch, who, you know, obviously that's changing right now. You're probably going to see Lynch falling behind Foster in a lot of drafts at the moment because of the news about Lynch and his holdout. Yeah, I mean, Foster and even DeMarco Murray taken right after him. Like, I'm happy to take those guys at the turn. If I've got the 12th pick in a 12-team league, like, I'm happy to take one or both of them, to be honest, with that pick, because I feel like injury concerns with those guys, like you said, that there are some experts out there who are, you know, cautiously optimistic about them. And, you know, I'm inclined to agree, because it's not like, it's not the same situation as the Noshon Moreno, where it's always been the same exact injury and it keeps on cropping up. And he's like, always that, will he even make the roster up until last year, obviously, when he broke out. It's not the same sort of injury concerns with Foster and with Murray. They're just kind of bad luck. And sometimes you have to take a risk with bad luck, particularly when it's baked in. Because if I guaranteed that Foster and Murray would get 16 games and 300, you know, plus touches, everyone would take them in the first round ahead of Lacy, ahead of Ball, ahead of Lynch, because they're well-rounded players. In good situations, they're both, I mean, like you said, with Foster and the change in schemes and things like that, there's reason to be concerned there, but, you know, he's also pretty much proven that he's just a really good, talented running back. And so there's hope there that, you know, there's just enough natural talent that's just maybe bypassed in the draft, that can, you know, shine through. And even still, like, you know, getting him involved in the passing game and the Bill O'Brien offense is something that maybe we can look forward to, that even if the running isn't, like you said, he's been on a decline anyway. Even if the running isn't up to par with what we've seen in the past. And also another thing, and this influences my decision sometimes too, is who else is going to take his carries? Who's going to do Arian Foster's right. job?
Right.
I mean, I know Bill O'Brien's not, you know, not afraid to throw in some no-name guy and just tell him, do your job in my offense. But, like, I don't see who we're looking at. Like, Andre Brown is just as much of an injury risk, if not more of one, and is definitely not as good of a player, no matter how you slice it, as Arian Foster. And then Dennis Johnson, Alfred Blue, like, forgive me for not thinking that these guys are going to ever just beat out Arian Foster for carries in the Houston offense.
Totally agree. And, I mean, you talk about Andre Brown, probably the most, you know, he's well known that he's had a few moments for fantasy football, but talk about a guy that just is the most boring running back ever. I mean, like, that doesn't scare me. And he's the number two guy on the depth chart. I knew about Dennis Johnson for, you know, tried to roll him out there for in a few daily leagues last year and just got pretty much no return out of that. And Alfred Blue, that's a guy I know a lot of football players. I know most of the football players, especially rookies and everything. He's somebody I, you know, barely know anything about. So, no, there's not a lot of competition in the backfield for Foster. So he's, like I said, he's a guy I'm okay with. Not super excited about it, but I'm okay with.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like he's at the right spot with his ADP. And so that's a guy that I'm okay taking, whereas maybe you as a self-proclaimed risk taker, you know, you might, you know, I'm putting words in your mouth here a little bit, but it seems like you might actually be more willing to take a guy who maybe has some more upside in that spot versus just taking a Foster who you kind of know what you're going to get even when he's good. Like, he doesn't have that ridiculous upside, particularly with the decline in his skills over time.
No, and if we're talking about guys at the turn, just hit on that real quickly. I'm writing something for Football Guys that should hopefully be up by the time you listen to this, like Leo said about his article. I would go with Gio Bernard there, and that's probably more of that inherent gambler. Yes. And upside. Definitely. Yeah, totally. And I'm talking about, you know, breaking ties in terms of talent is the theme of the article. And I wasn't weighing it against Foster. I was actually weighing it against Ball and just arguing that Bernard is the better player.
Yes.
And I'm more comfortable taking the better player, even if when the situations are comparable, I'm gonna, like I said, I'm gonna break ties in favor of Talon. And so yeah, that's the guy I would go with at the turn, and I would be excited about getting. Whereas Foster is one of those guys, I'm like, all right, I'll take him there, but I'm not that thrilled with it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's kind of move on, and we'll keep on bringing up different player situations and things like that as we go along. But let's move into just some other general strategy stuff here as we kind of move along with the podcast. When it comes to different formats, if you're in a PPR league in particular, this is something that most of my leagues I try to prefer PPRs. I honestly, part of it might just be that I score more points, and I like scoring more points. But I just like the PPR league in general. So when you approach a PPR draft, or if you're in mainly PPR drafts, when you draft in standard, what is it that you look for? Is there any different strategies that you take for that, or are there any players that you prefer, or maybe that you fade that other people would normally prefer?
Well, definitely I prefer PPR leagues, and you know, there's a few leagues that I'm in with my friends from home who are still like standard league truthers, and I guess just because they're not, you know, freak shows like me, who obsess over this stuff. But, you know, beside the point, I do tend to prefer, you know, stacking wide receivers. I mean, this just makes sense. It's a PPR league. I tend to prefer stacking wide receivers and bumping up tight ends, especially those elite guys. I do still generally avoid that dearth in the tight end group this year, but if I have a chance to take a guy like Jimmy Graham in the first round, or Gronk at the end, now probably the end of the first round, early second round, I'll do that, especially in a PPR league, because I think it's just a big tactical advantage. But also,
it's funny that you bring up tight ends, because I want to interject this real quick.
Oh, go for it.
Last year, and you can go on the interwebs and you can put in my name and look, and I advocated strongly for Gronkowski and Graham early in drafts. I was all about that. I was like, well, look at the advantage and that you get at the position and things like that. And I'm not totally opposed to the idea of if Rob Gronkowski falls that you take him, because there shouldn't be a multiple round gap between him and Graham. But just in general, from what I've seen, I really am shying away from, even in a PPR, the idea that Graham and Gronkowski are such an upside play at that point. I feel like it's actually what it forces you to do is pick for more upside and to be more accurate with your next few picks, because you're having to play catch up at the skill positions. And when I say skill positions, and I understand that it doesn't make sense because everything's a skill position in fantasy, is running back and wide receiver. I guess I could call them the flex spots or whatever, but I just say skill positions. If you listen to this podcast long enough, you'll hear me say it enough to, you know, mock me for it. But like, I feel like you're playing catch up the whole time, is that the bust rates at those positions just keep getting worse and worse and worse. And JJ Zacharyson at Number Fire has done a lot of work on this. That, like, when you don't take a running back or a wide receiver in the first, you're not getting one of those positions until the third or the fourth or the fifth. And at that point, that player is such an exponentially greater risk that you're really, like, and this obviously, you know, fits into your style more than mine, but, like, I'm not comfortable getting quote unquote a surefire tight end in Jimmy Graham, who doesn't really have that big of upside. Cause even last year, like, I owned a lot of shares of Jimmy Graham, and this is anecdotal. I mean, obviously I'm not the perfect drafter and I didn't screw up everything by taking Jimmy Graham. I didn't win the leagues that I took Jimmy Graham in, even though by all accounts he had a great season. Because, you know, when this year, for example, when your RB1 is Toby Gerhardt, because you can't get anybody better. You know, I don't like how that winds up. So it's been a shift for me, but, you know, stocking up on the other guys and like you said, stacking wide receivers in a PPR, I agree. It just makes sense. But yeah, I just wanted to interject that real quick, because just another proof of, I guess, adaptation, which I think we'd both agree is an important thing over the lifespan of being a fantasy player.
Absolutely. And to kind of counter what you just said, you know, I owned a ton of Jimmy Graham, and when I didn't have Graham, I had Gronk last year, and I won all those leagues. I mean,
I had Joik Bell and Jimmy Graham in like half of my leagues, and I didn't win. So,
oh, really? I mean, again, it's just, this is just how
It's anecdotal. It's
yeah, no,
anecdotal.
It's, yeah. It totally is. And that's fine, though, because it's a point that we should probably make, is that as much as we're going to talk about fantasy football in this podcast and, you know, in our daily lives in general on Twitter and everything, so much of this is relative. You know, I mean, your leagues were different than what I was in. And I can sit here and say, I, when you go back and forth with anecdotes, it is essentially meaningless because it's all relative. But that's not my point here. You know, I think when you take a guy like Graham, you're right. You are then raising the bust rates of the guys you're going to take after him, the wide receivers and the running backs and everything. And, you know, nobody takes quarterback early, but that's a whole nother discussion. but you know, running backs and wide receivers, again, this comes back to probably something that we're going to hear a lot from me over this podcast is you know, the ego and confidence of my own intelligence. And that is disgusting to hear myself say, but there's kind of a point to it, because I think when you play fantasy, you have to have that. You have to have that sort of, I believe that I'm right on these guys and that I'm good, that what I project is going to take place. So I'm confident enough to go into my draft saying I will take Jimmy Graham at the, you know, 106 or the 107, because I'm not going to take him over one of the four elite running backs or anything.
Quick fire here. You're not going to take him over the four elite, which I assume you mean McCoy, Charles, Peterson, and Forte.
Correct.
Are you taking him over Megatron? In a PPR, we'll say a PPR.
I haven't been faced with that decision yet, because I think I've only taken Graham at the 6 and 7.
Well, you're faced with it now. We're in a hypothetical draft. You're at the 1.06, and the four running backs and Lynch went first.
No, I think I would go with Megatron at that point, and then probably try to finagle Gronk. But at that point, I think I would go with Megatron there.
Okay. So then those five. I mean, would you take Demaryius over Graham? Would you take AJ Green?
No, I think
Eddie Lacy.
I think I would go, because okay, so this is something that I'm kind of finally honing in on what I want to do this year. I think my ideal draft is taking one of those running backs or then Graham, and then I really think there's a meat of this draft in the running back class between rounds four to six. So,
we disagree there.
We can totally get into that later, but it's something I'm gonna write plenty about coming up here soon, so you'll have to put up with that. Well, I guess you don't have to put up with that, but
I mean, I like half of those guys. I mean, if we're talking like Gerhardt, Sankey, Matthews, Jennings, Thomas, Richardson, Bell, like I like a couple of those guys. Like,
no, yeah, totally. I'm not saying every one of them is it, but I'm saying that there's a lot of, you know, good RB2 candidates or strong RB3 candidates that you can pick from that group.
To me, and this is to kind of go back to the point of taking the tight end early and kind of boxing yourself into a corner, is that I really like the running back talent that happens from the first round turn down to the end of the third. Like, if I can exit the first three rounds that I have before with, like, LaShawn McCoy, Arian Foster, Doug Martin, like, if you told me that last year, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the godliest draft ever in 2013. 2014, obviously, injury concerns and playing time concerns, I guess, for Martin, which is a load of crap. Don't tell anybody I said that, though. Keep his ADP right where it is. I like it where it is.
I'm not going to pull out the guns and battle you on Martin right now, but that's a whole other thing. But no, I see what you're saying, and that's another point to bring up here, is that I think I tweeted this the other day. I've heard throughout, you know, listening to a ton of podcasts, reading a bunch of articles, I've heard through each part of this offseason that quarterback is always deep, so that's a given.
Yes.
And I heard, you know, I've heard people say running backs are deep, wide receivers are deep, and then I heard somebody say that tight end is deep, which I don't know about that, but
it is.
I think it's deep, but there's this big disgusting gap in the middle of it, which I don't know. But anyways,
I think there's a gap after the first two.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
From there, and maybe you can include, I think I would include Cameron. And then a big gap, but that's
a controversial. We'll get into that more later too.
Yeah.
We'll have to have a tight end podcast at this
point. We might have to have more than one of these podcasts where we talk about all this stuff. But anyways, So I've heard it throughout the, you know, fantasy season or the build up to it that, you know, all these position groups are deep, and I think that's just kind of a philosophical point I have is that people are saying that based on, you know, oh, well, we really like these group of players, but we don't really like this. I'm not making my point very well here, but, you know,
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that people define an arbitrary point at which it stops being deep.
Yeah, exactly. And that it's only deep. I say, you know, that I love this rounds 4 to 6 of running backs, but, you know, there's guys in there like, well, not now, but at one point Ray Rice was in that, and I wouldn't have touched Ray Rice at any point in drafts. So it's based on, yeah, there's 4 or 5 guys I really like. And again, I think that just comes back to being confident in yourself and saying, these are my evaluations and I'm going to stick to them.
Sure. And to get back to what we're talking about with PPR, because I feel like this all was influenced by that because this is kind of how we look at it. But what I like to do is the same thing that I do in a standard league, really, and that is just to load up on skill position talent, running backs and wide receivers. But I am a sucker for the 100 catch guys in a PPR league, and that means that, like, I won't leave a PPR league without Edelman or Welker or Kendall Wright or Brian Hartline or even a Darren Sproles and a Danny Woodhead and a Dexter McCluster, who I'm working on that article for now. Like, I won't leave a PPR draft with one of those guys. If I don't get one of those guys in a PPR draft, I failed, in my opinion, because just, and this is where we kind of differ, that I kind of like to look at floors and where the floor is relative to the ADP, while you look at the ceiling and where the ceiling is relative to the ADP. Like, if I can get Wes Welker in, like, the 4th or 5th round, like, I know I'm going to get that from him. And so if he manages to sneak into the end zone a couple more times than everybody thought, like, I'm getting a bonus there. But, like, he's not going to fail me. He's not going to fall and provide, like, 7th round value with my 4th round pick, because he's going to catch 100 passes, particularly with Peyton Manning at quarterback. Like, Kendall Wright's maybe not as safe of a pick because of his quarterback, but he's the same thing, and that risk is baked in. Like, he could be a 100 catch guy 2 rounds later than Welker, which, you know, to me is just a great value.
I guess. I mean, I see what you're saying. Welker's a guy that I probably am not going to invest in that 4th round range, just because I see too many negatives. And we don't have to talk about Welker for, you know, 10 minutes here.
Well, it's exactly the discussion we have already, is that if you're at the 4.4, you're taking Patterson. I'm taking Welker or Roddy White. Those are the 2 guys that I'm taking.
Yep.
In the 4th
round. And I would take White over Welker, for sure.
Would you take him over Patterson?
No, probably not, just because I'm just because then I'll have this terrible itch in my arm if I didn't take that big risk.
Your ego definitely doesn't let you do that. Okay, so that's PPR. Real quick, we'll talk about best ball, because we've been playing those with the MFL 10 format. This kind of format seems to fuel your love of ceiling and upside even more than maybe a regular league does.
Oh yeah, definitely. And though this is a league where I'm comfortable taking a guy like Patterson at the 4, at the 4th round, because
you don't have to pick.
No, I don't have to. Yeah. I don't have to pick when he's gonna hit, or when he's gonna maybe post like a 2 for 20 week or something like that. Which, you know, as much as I believe in him, I'll admit that that's totally possible. And I don't necessarily have to be hurt because of that. And, you know, I think we've talked before about this, that while you also have to take these tremendous ceiling guys like him, or maybe in the 5th round of DeSean Jackson, who I don't really like to invest in standard leagues, or, you know, where you have to pick your lineup. But in a best ball league, I'll take that, because if he, you know, comes out with some outrageous 28 point week, I want to have that. But at the same time, you also have to, and this is another thing that I've really been trying to do in mocks lately, and in an auction draft I did with the Football Guys staff, I really wanted to balance out my roster. You know, while I take these guys like Patterson, maybe then I come back in, you know, the 8th round or whatever, or in an auction league like I did, you know, I pay a little small price for a guy like Marcus Colston, where, you know, I wouldn't normally do that, but I want to have that little insurance. And with an MFL 10, you get so many shots at it. You know, you get 22 picks. So it's a big, you're essentially, it's like that aim small, miss small. I'm shooting at so many targets here, I've got to hit something.
Yeah, I'm with you there, but I still, the value lost in taking a guy like Patterson in the fourth and him only giving you a handful of usable weeks, whereas, you know, if I'm taking a guy like Roddy White in the fourth, you know, I'm going to get 14 usable weeks out of Roddy White. I may only get 7 out of Patterson if he continues his boom or bust ways. That allows me to maybe be a little risky later on, but I want to build a good foundation in a best ball because I want every week to know that the players I drafted to be my stars are my stars every week. So that's why, you know, I'd rather start with, you know, an elite running back or an elite wide receiver rather than, you know, maybe taking a chance. Like, I maybe am a little less injury risk taking in an MFL 10 because I want my first round pick to be one of the players that the best ball picks every week because that's what I invested in him to be. I'll take a risk a little later. I don't like him as a player, but I see the potential for him to perform well. I've taken Kelvin Benjamin in a few MFL 10s. Never take him in a regular league, but he has the potential to score 3 touchdowns because he's just huge and nobody can defend him in the red zone. So, because yeah, like if you're faced with the decision of Kelvin Benjamin or Jarrett Boykin, like at that point, I'm willing to take the risk because Boykin's not a risk. The only risk for Boykin is that he's not going to play anymore because Davante Adams is going to pass him on the depth chart. The risk for Benjamin is that he's just not really a very good wide receiver yet, but he's a freak of an athlete that can produce some big numbers for me. So that's a guy that, you know, and then even like you said, I still balance that out by a couple rounds later getting a Brian Hartline. So, you know, I'm still keeping that floor. And I feel like that's, you know, maybe that doesn't suit the system very well. But I also feel like you're putting yourself in a position to benefit from the mistakes of others when you kind of consider floor more than ceiling. Like if I'm in a league with you, and if it was a 2-man league, you know, obviously it's different. But since it's 12, like you make a couple bad picks, like you take a Patterson and he only has a couple usable weeks. You know, somebody else takes, you know, a Percy Harvin and he does the same. While my Roddy White's out there not having the best weeks ever, but continuing to put up points, like relatively speaking, my fourth round value was good. So if any of my late round guys hit, like, you know, last year with a Joik Bell, last year with a Noshon Moreno, etc., then I'm coming out net ahead. So I guess it's really about the confidence in where you want to take your chances. And obviously more of a gambler is going to take them earlier. And someone who's less of a gambler is going to take them later. But we're running out of time here for the podcast. So let's quick fire just talk about something, because you mentioned something earlier that I definitely wanted to bring up. And just get our thoughts out there quick as we end up our first strategy based fantasy podcast. And that was, nobody takes quarterbacks early. You said that earlier and talking about deep positions, talking about looking at floor, considering ceiling, things like that. All of that we've said all episode long feeds into our thoughts on quarterbacks. So just really quickly, your thoughts on the quarterback position in general and how you approach it in fantasy football.
Yeah. So quarterback is deep. I don't think there's not many out there that would argue that, especially, you know, quote unquote experts. There are more, you know, just general thoughts. There are 12 QB1s in a typical league, 12 team league. And there's more than that available. You know, there just is. And I tend to wait on quarterback because there's so, you know, it just doesn't fit within the way I look at tiers and where I think the strengths in drafts are. I tend to not end up with, I haven't taken Nick Foles or Andrew Luck or Matt Stafford, any of those guys at any point yet in the fantasy season, just because, you know, rounds 4 through 7 or whatever, I'm typically looking elsewhere. But if insane value does present itself to me, I will take a quarterback early. So again, I think that just comes back to being flexible and, you know, not living and dying by any sort of biblical strategy or anything. And yeah, that, so I think we'll both probably agree with that. Like I'm not sure if it was our MFL 10 or if it's one I'm doing side by side with it. I ended up taking Peyton Manning in the 3rd round.
Yeah.
And that's just, I just can't pass that up. You know, I'm not going to consider Manning in the 1st round. I'm not even going to consider him in the 2nd round, but if I'm in mid 3rd round pick and you know, the guy who was who easily won people leagues last year is sitting there, I'll go for it. I'll take that dive. But it's few and far in between. And again, I just trust myself to end up with a guy like Kaepernick or Ben Roethlisberger and kind of switching, you know, the two of those out and forming some sort of committee later on. The one I did, I think this actually, I think is our MFL 10. I did end up taking Robert Griffin in the seventh round. Mm-hmm. And again, that's just to diversify. And also because I can see that offense putting up a ton of points and he might be one that I take start to think about in the seventh. And then if he's there in the eighth, then I'll take the dive. But in general, you know, not to ramble on, quarterback is a position I wait on, and I think there's just way too many appealing options late to sink a six-round pick into Andrew Luck or Nick Foles.
Yeah, I definitely don't take a quarterback in the first round. Well, I say that I don't. I did in my first MFL 10 because I just wasn't prepared at all, and I just threw a pick on Aaron Rodgers, and I felt really dumb about it.
We've all been there.
But, yeah. I understand that the three, the Manning, Breeze, and Rodgers, are a good step above the rest, but it's not a big enough gap for me to justify that investment, like you said, unless one of them slides to some absurd place. Like, if Breeze is the best one to me, so if Breeze were available in the third round, like mid to late third round, yeah, I'd struggle to not take him there, but I own Andrew Luck, I own Nick Foles in some league out there, I own Cam Newton, I own Matt Ryan, I own Tom Brady, because they've all fallen into the eighth or ninth round for me.
Yeah.
Because other than Stafford, who seems to be everyone's like consensus number four for some reason, all those guys, just depending on, you know, how many people are willing to take a quarterback in those mid rounds and which ones they choose, you know, especially if like a guy like Kaepernick, you know, kind of gets picked a little early and that pushes everyone down. Yeah, like I can honestly see, you know, Foles or Luck or Newton all finishing as top five quarterbacks behind those big three, obviously. So, like, I'm happy to take them in the eighth or the ninth, but the reason I wait till the eighth or the ninth, pretty much without question and without even really checking the QB spot at my other picks, is just because I'm also really happy with Tony Romo, who I can feel can be a top five guy if he plays every game. And even a Jay Cutler, who I can feel confident enough about it definitely being a QB1, if not being, you know, a higher end QB1, like a top half QB1. Just because of the situation he's in. And that's a situation, you know, just briefly going back to tight ends, is that, you know, that's why I'm okay waiting on tight end, is because I know Martellus Bennett's going to be there, who's in that same situation with Mark Trestman in that offense. So, but anyway, yeah, with quarterback, there's 17 guys that I'm comfortable with as my quarterback one. So I'm not going to, you know, spend to get the fifth of 17 when I don't feel like the 17th of 17 is that much further behind. And for the record, the 17th would be Andy Dalton, Big Ben, ooh, Russell Wilson, Phillip Rivers, Jay Cutler, and then everybody who you'd expect to be above them. And Andy Dalton, you can get, you know,
for free, pretty much.
Virtually, yeah. As far as quarterbacks go, definitely for free, unless you're in a league where everybody takes a backup, in which case, you know, obviously you're going to want to plan ahead a little bit better as to when you target him. And so then final discussion that we'll have.
Well, real quick on this point, just to kind of close the quarterback discussion out. If there's one position where, and this is kind of something, we were talking a little bit before we came on air, you know, where fantasy football and, you know, psychology, sociology, social sciences kind of mix, the quarterback is the one position where I think, you know, it's a point that I like to make a lot when people, you know, ask me for advice. It's that know your league, know the guys that you're drafting with. You know, if you're in an expert league, you're going to see guys like Cam Newton, you know, fall to the ninth or 10th round because everybody wants to wait on quarterback, almost like everybody wants to be the one that waits on quarterback the most, you know, and ends up with Alex Smith as your quarterback one, which could even still work out. It's crazy. But then if you're in a guy in a league with a bunch of your guys at work or a bunch of friends at work or something like that, you know, maybe those are the guys that are going to, and I was in a draft like this recently where guys are taking, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees in the first and early second round. And that tends to skew things. So again, you have to be prepared for anything. It's just with quarterback, especially, know who you're drafting with and anticipate that. So you can then adjust and start picking off those good players, you know, in the don't then respond and adjust with them. You know, when they start to zig, you start to zag. Start picking off those running backs, wide receivers in the second and first round, and then you are going to look fine when you come away with the Russell Wilson or something in the 10th round.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's the premise behind just the late-round quarterback strategy in general, with the exception that it's not just wait as long as you possibly can. It's wait as long as you can to get a guy that you feel confident with, you know, in producing the kind of value and always looking for value. But yeah, if you're in a league where quarterbacks are going to go early, you know, if you see Matt Stafford leave the board in the third, you know, and knowing that that person may also potentially take a backup before you take your first quarterback, you do need to keep an eye out and see, like, who's the last guy that I'm comfortable with and can right. I risk it? Like, don't make your pick at the, you know, like the 9.1 and not have another pick until, you know, a full two rounds later, and miss your chance on any quarterback one. So obviously, like you said, it's not about knowing your draft ahead of time, but also feeling out your draft as it goes, because you can be left in a situation where, you know, you are left without a good quarterback one, and that's not the end of the world. There are some other options for that, and we'll talk about streaming and things like that later, in a different episode. But yeah, that's definitely a situation where you can get yourself burnt. That happened to me in my family league last year. Quarterbacks went super early, and I wound up with just garbage at quarterback. and it was bad, but I had the assets to trade in a league full of, you know, people who weren't really great traders, and I still lost. Right. But anyway, even though I still lost, it's you know, there are some anecdotal evidences there that we can talk about later. But that'll be it for the first episode of the Fantasy Game Plan Podcast. Before we sign off, Matt, why don't you let people know how they can get in touch with you? Because we definitely want to involve the audience in future shows, give us feedback, and ask us questions about players or about strategies and different formats and things like that that we can dissect from a maybe a different perspective than you might get elsewhere.
Definitely. So you can find me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. And, you know, I'm pretty available. I do work a day job now, so try to get at me later during the day. And I will, you know, I'm always happy to talk football, answer questions, anything, you know. And yeah, we do want to hear what people think about the show and what you want to bring to the table, because this can be a very interactive thing where, you know, you submit a scenario and we give our takes on it, why Leo would play it safer and why I would take the risk on a certain player. And as you can, I think you can see if you listen to the whole episode that, you know, we do see things very differently, Leo and I, and do things very differently. And it'll also be a ton of fun, you know, getting to laugh at when I swing and miss, or when Leo plays it too safe or whatever. It's going to be a fun show. And also, you know, if you don't know, Leo's a big Bucks fan. I'm a big Panthers fan. So we'll be going. We'll have a nice little banter back and forth, you know, when the Bucks inevitably disappoint like they always do.
Which team has a Super Bowl ring again? Anyway.
Not relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. And your thoughts on Doug Martin are obviously not biased at all either.
No.
I will admit that I like D'Angelo Williams, and I'm not afraid to say that as a fan.
Well, how could you not like D'Angelo Williams? But anyway.
Because he's old and slow.
Anyways.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at LeoHowell8. That's the number 8, and my first and last name's before it. And yeah, if you're listening to this show and you don't already follow me there, definitely give me a follow and interact with me about the show. Get some questions in, things like that we can present during the show, because that's really what makes it special is to be able to give people what they want to hear, because me and Matt can talk about our teams all day, but from a strategy perspective you can glean something from that. But when it's maybe your scenario in particular, that you can, you know, maybe get some more information on, you know, I'm in a league with a bunch of guys who take quarterback early. How do you think I approach it? Like, a question like that is perfect. Like, if you're in a keeper league and you already know that a bunch of quarterbacks are going to be gone, and how should you approach your draft? Like, that's the sort of stuff that we want to break down with you and kind of give you the why, so that you can apply it to future scenarios rather than just kind of saying, keep this guy, because they're the best players. Like, that's there's a lot more to fantasy than that. That's what we want to try to provide. So definitely get in touch with us. We will be active on Twitter to kind of give you some more information about where you can find out more about the show, and obviously keep you up to date on future episodes as well. So definitely stay tuned for that. But that will officially be it for the first episode of the Fantasy Game Plan Podcast. For Matt Harmon, I am Leo Howell, and we will see you later.